This is IAQ Radio, Indoor Air Quality Radio, the voice of the indoor air quality industry, with your hosts, Radio Joe Hughes and the Z-Man, Cliff Zlotnick. And now, Radio Joe Hughes.
Good day, wherever you're listening from, and welcome. It's episode 480 of IAQ Radio. It's Friday, October 6th. 2017. This week we welcome Big Jim Thompson, the large loss guru, our restoration industry global watchdog Pete Consigli, and calling in from Texas, Chris and Maria Slay of Rainbow International. Going to have a great show. We're going to continue our coverage of the hurricane recovery. Before we get started, let's thank our marquee sponsors.
IAQ Radio marquee sponsors are John Don Products, where restoration and abatement contractors shop. Visit them at johndon.com. That's johndon.com. Healthy Indoor Magazine, a free online digital magazine for industry professionals and consumers. Subscriptions are available at iaq.net. Particles Plus, engineers and manufacturers, feature rich particle counters, air quality monitoring, instrumentation, and vacuum pump technology. ParticlesPlus.com. Count on us. It's the 2017 Healthy Buildings Summit, November 2nd through the 4th at Seven Springs Mountain Resort in the gorgeous Laurel Highlands of southwestern Pennsylvania. Join industry leaders and educators as they discuss research to practice, navigating changing industries. It's 2.5 days of IEQ, remediation, building science, and home performance. Marquee sponsors include John Don Products, where restoration and abatement contractors shop. Particles Plus, count on us. Exhibitors are AEML Microbiology Laboratories, True Tech Tools, Prism Analytical Technologies, FiberLock Technologies, HaywardScore.com, and Instascope by Detection Tech. Register now at HealthyBuildingsSummit.com or call 814-754-4808.
Okay, please be sure to thank our sponsors of IAQ Radio when you inquire about their services or products. And last but not least, please visit the IAQ Training Institute website for the most current dates for the training you trust at iaqtraining.com. Let's turn it over to the Z-Man for today's IAQ Radio trivia question.
And now you can win a cool prize. It's time for the IAQ Radio trivia question. Be the first to correctly answer. Simply email your answer to czlotnick@cs.com. Or if listening live, just text your answer from your computer. And now, here's the Z-Man with this week's IAQ Radio trivia question.
Congratulations to Doug Conan, Aerotech Environmental in Dayton, Ohio, the first person to identify a band or tie from the Middle French as the derivation of the word lean. The IQ Radio question for today, Friday, October 6, 2017, has been sponsored by IDEAS, the solution chemistry company, creating unique solutions, odor removal, surface cleaning, and decontamination problems. Here is today's trivia question. What were the first two Atlantic hurricane names to be retired? Back to you, Joe.
Thank you, Cliff. Well, today we've got Big Jim Thompson. He's handled large commercial and industrial fire and water losses all over the United States and Puerto Rico. When you're ready to up the ante and compete against the big guns on large insurance claims, Jim is the guy to teach you how. He's handled large, complex commercial and industrial insurance losses in 43 states and Puerto Rico. While many restoration contractors strive to get on the State Farm or Farmers Insurance list of preferred vendors, Jim wanted off the list. He's a hands-on guy who abhors working in offices and prefers to lead from the front. Cliff?
Chris Slay comes to the water restoration industry from a corporate background, where he's most recently a business consultant for Accenture. He is a Rainbow Restoration franchise owner in Sugar Land, Texas. As the owner, Chris makes it a point to meet each customer personally to ensure the work is going according to plan and according to the insurance design. He's been omnipresent in the Texas area, on the news, and in the trenches, helping with recovery following Hurricane Sandy.
And Maria Slay, she's got a master's degree in business and 19 years of experience in the insurance industry and is a licensed adjuster. She understands how property insurance works and how to make each loss beneficial to both the insured and insurer. In addition to managing the branch, she schedules the jobs, writes the estimates, manages the contractors, and you also find her on site working with her hands with the other workers at the site. We've also got PC, Pete Consigli, hopefully coming. He may be a little delayed. Pete, you want to do, or Cliff, you want to do a quick intro of Pete?
Sure. Pete Consigli is the restoration industry's global watchdog. He's been a longtime friend and guest on IQ Radio. He presently serves as an advisor with RIA's Education Certification Committees and staff. He is the water loss specialist, prep course facilitator, and program advisor. He also advises the RIA Board Directors Association Management Team on matters impacting the restoration industry and RIA.
All right, let's get a question out to the group. I want to go around the horn on this one. Let's start with Jim. Jim, you're primarily working in Florida, I believe, but you're also working with people in other parts of the country that were damaged or hurt by the hurricanes here. How's the recovery coming along from your perspective?
I was in Houston immediately thereafter working with restoration companies, and it was the nicest place to have a hurricane I've ever seen. Within a matter of days, the Walmarts were open, the gas stations were open, the restaurants were open. Those of us who survived Katrina and Andrews and others realized what it was like running a tap without that. Florida was hit yes with the damage, so therefore you could still go down and have your breakfast and then go to the lodge.
Gotcha. Let's get Chris or Maria. How are things? You know, there was a lot of attention in Texas when Harvey hit, and then, you know, things kind of drifted away as we had Irma and the other hurricanes hit. How are things in Texas at this point?
You know, the effort in Houston is moving along. It's slow. And the media took everybody's attention away from Houston. It went to Florida for a while. It went to Puerto Rico for a while. But we're still here dealing with it. But the process has been slow, you know, especially for homeowners who need financial assistance. But FEMA is still here. They're helping everybody. They've done a great job. I'm very impressed with both local and federal government.
And Maria, anything you'd like to add?
No, it is a slow process, but we're moving along. I mean, we're slowly recovering in Houston, so we're proud of our city.
Have all the ports reopened? Is gasoline and oil moving, or is your electric all back up?
In most areas, the ports are open. Gasoline is now available. There was a time where you couldn't find a gas station that had any gas. That's because the trucks couldn't get through. Since we were so flooded, the gasoline trucks couldn't get to the stations. But we've dried out, the flood has receded, and so gas is, you know, I guess right in line with everybody else in the country now. It's a little more expensive now than it was before Harvey. I don't know if that's because of Harvey. The grocery stores are back in business, the restaurants are back in business, so we're moving right along.
Cliff, let me turn it over to you.
Let's first talk a little bit about insurance coverage for Chris and Maria. How are you dealing with lack of insurance coverage, you know, with clients?
This is Chris. I assume you mean flood insurance, which is
right,
what's
right.
Affected here. You know, and the thing about flood insurance, some people have it, some people don't. For those people that do not have the insurance, we go in and we will give them an approximate cost to mitigate their house. But in addition to that, we also give them free advice on what they can do themselves to cut down their costs. Because if we come in and do the entire mitigation, you know, that's one price. But if they can cut their own sheetrock, if they can, you know, go rent a dehumidifier, some air movers, anything they can do on their own is going to save them some money.
You mentioned renting a dehumidifier and air mover. Are they available for rent in your area?
Well, they are today. They weren't a month ago.
Okay.
Because they had all been taken up. But you can today you can walk into any hardware store, and in the very front of the store, as you walk in, they've got stacks of dehumidifiers ready to go.
And
unfortunately, that wasn't a month ago. They were running out a month ago.
And Jim, I want to get the same question for you and with respect to Florida. How's the equipment situation? Is there enough equipment available? Are there enough crews? One of the things I read, and this goes back maybe to Chris and Maria more, but Jim, you can comment on this as well. There's a shortage of workers to actually do this work because there's so much of it all at once, especially construction-related work. Jim?
I really haven't ran into that. We were very concerned about that, very concerned about that, when this last one was supposed to be the worst hurricane in history. Of course, you're always the worst hurricane 3 days out. But it was going to wipe out Miami and Naples and the whole bit. And all the equipment in the country, everything that was to rent or buy, was in Houston. And we were looking at this going, how the heck are we going to get this state back in operation if we lose Dade County and Broward, et cetera, all at the same time? Well, what happened is a lot of guys headed for Florida, just like they always do. They base it on the news. They don't base it on the need once for the clients. And they showed up here, and they had a tremendous amount of equipment. There was a lot of equipment. Friends of mine brought in, Ryan Peacock brought in 9,000-15,000 desks, et cetera. So there was a lot of equipment available down here. Now, at first, the first day or two, of course not, because the logistics are still going on. But so many people read the news, hear the news, jump in the truck, put their 15 guys in a motel and come on down, and then are sitting there going, how the hell do we get work now? It's supposed to be everywhere.
Now what? Yeah, yeah. Jim, I'm wondering, in Florida, what kind of other issues have you been running into that maybe you haven't seen in past events like this? You've been around forever. You've responded in 43 different states and Puerto Rico. Anything unique about this one?
No, not really. It's pretty standard. The keys were not allowed to go in there for the first week. Now they're taking bids on 500 military houses in Key West, for example. Equipment's hard to get down there. Gas is hard to get. Diesel's hard to get in some places, but the rest of it's pretty well back up and operational. Once again, even when Naples was down and supposedly horribly flooded, there was still gas to be had within 72 or 96 hours. I understand it's out when the storm comes in, but hell, it was out for 3 days before the storm because people were standing in line. What I'm concerned about is Puerto Rico. I've gotten a lot of calls and a lot of logistics down there. They didn't have the gas. They don't have the mobility. They don't have the ability to have trucks. Having to charter aircraft down there with hazmat and generators and everything. Ships are leaving almost every day from Port Everglades heading down there. That's where you got a real disaster.
Okay. And Chris and Maria, when Florida got hit by Irma, and then, you know, the last one, Maria hit Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands, was there any slower or lack of response from the government, FEMA, et cetera, because they had to move resources? Did you see any of that, or did they do a pretty good job of handling that?
No, they did a pretty good job in handling that. And, of course, some of the FEMA employees had to be deployed to Florida to handle the situation in Florida. But even till today, we still see FEMA representatives in the local communities throughout Houston. So it's great to see that they're still here and supporting our community.
And, Jim, I'm wondering, you know, this you've seen catastrophic losses nationwide. Is there any unique or different strategies on this round of losses that you didn't use in the past?
Well, what's happening now is the availability of the equipment. And Cliff can go into this too. It used to be there was only a half dozen of us that had desks on semis and the big 500 kW generators and all. Now with my buddies at Sunbelt and all, restoration companies and other companies rent the equipment a year before the storm happens. So then when the storm happens, they're able to secure the gen sets and desks they need. It's changed because of the availability of rental equipment. Now it gives the average restoration company, the guy doing $1 to $5 million a year, the chance to compete against the big boys, because all he's got to do is learn how to hook up some generators and some deskins, and we can show him that. And he can be running an 800,000 square foot facility or 200,000, 100,000 square foot facility that didn't used to be. Cliff will attest to that.
Jim, one of the things that you mentioned about Puerto Rico being a disaster, I'd like to kind of shift over there. I understand that there's a new program through OSHA called OSHA Disaster Site Workers Program, and I know that you know about that. I'd like you to comment on that if you could.
Well, real fast, Cliff and I go back to the old days and AIDS long ago. In our industry, there is a tremendous amount of training available through IAQA, through IICRC, the RIA, CRWLS programs, et cetera. Incredible amount of training. Used to be Cliff and Lloyd were the only two guys training, and Jeff Bishop and some other guys came around. Now there is a tremendous amount of training. But it's in our industry. One thing that is majorly lacking, I've been consulting now for 6 years, restoration companies all over the country, they don't have safety training. They, honest to God, don't even have the basic 10-hour OSHA General Industry of Construction safety training. OSHA came up with the Disaster Site Workers Program after 9/11 because they found that regular construction workers, regular general industry workers, did not have the capability to go into a disaster area because the working environment was so different. So the full Disaster Site Workers Program consists of the 40-hour HAZWOPER, the 10-hour or 30-hour construction training, and then the OSHA 7600 Disaster Site Workers Course. On that, we go into incident command. We go into natural and man-made disasters, terrorist events. There's a tremendous amount of training just to give a guy an overview. Now, when you show up at a checkpoint, I'm not picking on anybody, you show up at Barney Fife with his bullet there on Highway 1 in Florida, and you show him your IICRC, WRT, AMRT, CRWLS, blah, 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 he don't care. He doesn't know. You pull out a card with an OSHA symbol on it that says Disaster Site Workers and said, I'm supposed to be down there, you got a much better chance of bluffing your way through Barney Fife. You got a hell of a lot better chance of getting a commercial job with a corporate risk manager who doesn't know our industry training, and very seldom do they ever ask about it, I might add, but they sure recognize that their people are not allowed on their job sites without an OSHA 10-hour, and you show them the Disaster Site Workers course, guys are getting major losses just because they have the OSHA card.
Jim, great advice. Let me back up just a moment on that OSHA course, the Disaster Site Worker Program. Now, you recommend the OSHA 10-hour, which just about anybody in construction really should have that. It's a 10-hour course, one day basically, important information on electrical safety, fall protection, etc. Then, after that, I'm just wondering, do they have to have the OSHA 10-hour before they take the specific course for cat losses?
Well, here's what I'm doing. I'm working with Harvey Cohen in November. We'll come up with the exact dates later. But anyway, it's the 14th, 15th, something like that. We're doing an OSHA 10-hour construction course. Day and a half, I think it's $150, something like that. Then for the next 2.5 days, we're doing the OSHA Disaster Site Workers course. So in 4 days, a guy can walk out of there with an OSHA 10-hour card and the OSHA Disaster Site Workers card. If in the future he takes the 40-hour HAZWOPER, he can get a special card called the Disaster Site Workers Program card. I agree. Every person in our industry should have an OSHA 10-hour card. No, it's not required. But a lot of contractors, as you know, will not allow you on their job site without them. A lot of risk managers, facility and property managers, will not allow you on their companies without having a 10-hour card. The Disaster Site Workers Course is a 16-hour course. It takes 2.5 days. It's a hell of a lot of fun. And guys walk around with a swagger like you wouldn't believe when they're showing their Disaster Site Workers cars with an OSHA limb, you know, from OSHA.
How many people are teaching that, Jim? I don't see much of it advertised, which is understandable. And do you have to be... I'm sorry?
I said too damn many. No, you have to be an OSHA trainer first.
Right.
You have to show 5 years of job site experience teaching safety to become an OSHA trainer. Then to become an OSHA disaster site workers, you have to show your experience in disasters, et cetera. And I used a letter from the St. Louis Fire Marshal that said for 30 years I helped out St. Louis after major chemical and other disasters. And boy, I was one right away, you know? But it's an incredible course. It's a lot of fun. It deals with stuff that no other thing in our industry deals with, because it's dealing with WMD, weapons of mass destruction. It's dealing with what do you do when a terrorist event happens, when a rapid shoot, mass casualty event happens. It also is the it's the first course you take. We cannot cover everything that could happen in a major disaster in 16 hours, but it gives a taste of what it is. And then, according to OSHA, you have to have industry-specific training to the actual disaster you're on before you go in there.
I see. And is there a an OSHA-developed course manual, or do you have to follow their outline and then develop your own course materials?
I'm using their outline, I'm using their materials, I'm using their PowerPoints. I must spend 2 hours on Incident Command System. I must spend this amount of time on chemical and biological weapons. I must spend this amount of time. It's very, very regimented. It is an OSHA training course.
Gotcha. Okay. Very good. Let's go back, and I want to talk to Chris and Maria a little bit. You guys have a rainbow franchise or two in the Texas area, Sugarland and Katy. Are there any other rainbow franchise brands helping with the cat response in Texas?
Yes, as a matter of fact, several came down here. We have a catastrophe unit, if you will, from our corporate. It's not corporate owned, but it's a task force, if you will, that organizes all the franchisees from around the nation. Can voluntarily come to any catastrophe depending on what they have going on locally. So here in Houston, throughout Harvey, I think we had as many as 35 franchisees working throughout South Houston. That's from Port Aransas over to Beaumont. So really helps to bring in people from other areas. They're trained, they know what to do, and they're here to help us. Maria and myself have actually gone to catastrophes around the country to help other franchisees when they're buried.
Quick Cliff. Follow-up, if I can, Chris. What about the other rainbow brands? Because I know that you have the plumbing brand. I know that you have the the landscape brand. Are any of those other people also engaged nationally down in Houston?
Absolutely. There's a number of brands, and collectively we call ourselves Neighborly. So
okay.
I would say, Rainbow International is a Neighborly company. So these other brands that you talk about, Mr. Appliance and others, they actually get involved in a catastrophe like this. When you go into a flooded establishment, whether it's a restaurant or a residence or whatever it is, they have appliances. They have electricity, and now they have electrical problems. They have plumbing problems. So all of these other brands that are within the Neighborly brand absolutely come in and help us.
Let me, what I'd like to do here is I see the Restoration Industries Global Watchdog has joined us, and just before we break for halftime here, I want to get an update from Pete and see what he's been seeing in his travels. So let's unmute Pete. Pete, you with us?
Yeah, I'm here, guys. How you doing?
Very good. Good to have you back. I know you had an emergency. So are you driving and talking?
No, I'm actually not driving right this minute, but I logged on and I was waiting for the address from going to pull up on my GPS, so I will be driving. But anyway, since you brought me on, I caught the tail end of Jim's comments on the OSHA disaster worker, and then the gentleman on the rainbow stuff. So I didn't kind of get the whole picture on Jim's thing with the OSHA disaster worker. I'm very interested in how that how many guys in the field are actually have that, how important that would be with guys going out and doing cat work. Even though it's a voluntary program, I think eventually that may evolve into some kind of something mandatory. I'd be interested in Jim's comments on that, and also if any of the Rainbow people have certified in that program and doing that. I think that'd be pretty important.
Okay. Jim?
Yeah. The OSHA Disaster Site Workers Program is not required work on job sites by OSHA, et cetera. It is extensive training, as much as we could do it in 2.5 days, that you're not going to get at any of our industry training. We're going into things about what does the incident command system do? Where do you fit in? Where do you report in a catastrophe? Who in the incident command system do you liaison with, et cetera? Where do you fit in the overall picture of a Houston or a Florida or Puerto Rico? It is a lot of fun because you're throwing things at these students that they've never had thrown at them before. It's dealing with real disasters, real catastrophes, real weapons of mass destruction, major casualty incidents, etc. And it just gives them a taste of what's going on around them in a disaster. We're also used to how much fans we put down and DUs we plug in and how many amps we get out of the generator. We don't necessarily know what is the community response doing. Where do we fit in as part of our community? And I worked for decades out of St. Louis with the Disaster Management Council of the city and county and the surrounding state to work with how can we help the community when it really gets the heck kicked out of it. By that, it enabled me to go from a better cleaning service with Cliff's help into a nationwide disaster restoration firm because I knew what the other guy wanted. I knew what the risk manager wanted. I knew what the facility manager wanted. I knew what the government wanted. And by working with them, you learn that at the Disaster Site Workers course. You have to have per OSHA requirement. You have to have a 10-hour general industry or construction first, which ISERC HST might go for that. We're doing it at Harvey's office in Orlando, the 14th and 15th of November, the 10-hour, half a day on the 15th, and then 2.5 days, 15th, 16th, and 17th, on the Disaster Site Workers. We can have 40 people for the 10-hour, and only 10 people for the Disaster Site Workers. We spend 3.5 hours just on respirators, different types of respirators, et cetera. So it's a lot of fun.
So look, I guess my main point in really in asking that question is that my understanding originally in the development of that program by OSHA was really designed for corporate employees, government employees, people that had to go into these disaster work areas, a lot of the stuff that Jim just kind of talked
about. No, it was designed for the guys who went into disasters as right. The workers, as the riggers, as the construction guys, as the general cleanup, who had no understanding that those lines might be dangerous, that there might be snakes in there, that there might be a secondary explosive on a terrorist event as you walk in the door to clean it up.
Jim,
it could be up and behind
that.
You.
I understand that part. But over the years, with a lot of facility people and other people that I've dealt with, some of them have sent their people as part of the disaster plans to actually go through that. So when a disaster hits, they had a broader understanding. So the point that I'm trying to make is that this program, even though it's voluntary program and it's not required, it's kind of under the radar in our industry. So if all these first responders and potentially even some of the employees of clients that they would respond to have went through this program and our industry hasn't gotten their arms around it, I don't know. To me, it just kind of seems like something's missing on the whole thing. So
let's switch over to the marketing, Pete, and that is if you walk in to a risk manager and say, we can get through checkpoints, we can do this, we know about it, here's our OSHA Disaster Site Workers card, I might be able to use that as a marketing. That's not what OSHA intended, but I'm talking about as a marketing guy here. That might be able to get you more work in. No, it's not required by the government at this time. It's a lifetime card at this time. That might change the next, in the next 10 minutes. It might be required on every job site. But as a marketing tool, my guys all have this. That's a hell of a close.
Cliff,
Pete, if I may, one of the things that we always talk about in our industry is communication, how important communication is with the client and with the insurance company. You have to understand, I think this is one of the things that Jim touched upon and can expand upon, is all of these other, whether it's you're dealing with the military, whether you're dealing with the government, whether you're dealing with police, they all have their own language, their own lexicon, their own terms. If you can communicate with them, it makes it a whole lot easier. And I think their marketing advantages and other red tape advantages and so on and so forth that kind of follow along with that. So I think it's really about communication and being able to communicate, you know, with FEMA and with other organizations that someone in our industry that doesn't have the training in how to communicate with those people, I think you'd be a lot better off.
Pete, you brought in Mr. Coombs, I understand, at the RIA 2 years ago, 3 years ago in Orlando, and this is exactly what he was talking about.
You guys are preaching to the choir on this, so you don't need to sell me on it. What I'm saying is that I'm just surprised that the industry hasn't gotten their arms around it, and that's why I thought it was important that we get more of this information out on the show, the key bullet points, get into Cliff's blog, so that we could get the word out to the industry, to wider audience. So look, Jim brought up another thing about these communities. And, you know, Cliff and myself went several years ago with about five or six other guys representing REA at the time to a resilient community conference in Charleston, South Carolina. And there was the mayor of Charleston, the mayor of Gulf Shores, talking about how they responded after Katrina and all this kind of events. So that's exactly the point, is that I think our industry is kind of missing that. I like what the Rainbow Gentleman was talking about, the friendly community and all that kind of stuff. So I'm just curious if outfits like Rainbow, the national franchises, Belfort, you know, all the national players, if they actually do this disaster worker program and use it in the marketing. So I'll toss it back to you guys.
Okay. Chris, Maria, anything you'd like to add on that one before we go to halftime?
I don't have anything to add, Maria.
No, I think it's important because we are a neighborly company and we utilize some of the other Mr. Electric, Mr. Reuter to help us with this catastrophe event. That's a big plus. That definitely gives us an advantage in a catastrophe like this. So we really appreciate the fact that we're a company that's able to kind of move forward a little bit ahead of other restoration companies, in my opinion.
Okay, we're going to stop for halftime. We'll be back with the second half of our interview. We've got Jim Thompson, we've got Chris and Maria Slay, and we've got the Restoration Industry Global Watchdog, Pete Consigli. We'll be back in 90 seconds.
IAQ Radio would like to thank our association sponsors. The Indoor Air Quality Association, a nonprofit multidisciplinary organization dedicated to promoting the exchange of indoor environmental information through education and research. Visit them at iaqa.org. Gray Wolf Sensing Solutions, who use advanced sensor software technology and embedded computers to provide superior environmental test instrumentation. Visit them, wolfsense.com. IAQ marquee sponsors are John Don Products, where restoration and abatement contractors shop. Visit them at johndon.com. That's johndon.com. Healthy Indoor Magazine, a free online digital magazine for industry professionals and consumers. Subscriptions are available at iaq.net. Particles Plus, engineers and manufacturers, feature rich particle counters, air quality monitoring, instrumentation, and vacuum pump technology. ParticlesPlus.com. Count on us.
Okay, we're back for the second half of our interview. I want to jump back to Chris and Maria Slay, let's talk a little bit about some of the specific projects that you're dealing with. How is the work coming in for you? Are you part of these, you know, preferred provider programs? Are you getting stuff because you have reached out into the neighborhood? Are you getting jobs from the corporate people? How's that all coming in for you?
You know, it's a variety of ways. It started actually before the hurricane hit. We had prior customers. You hear, you know, there's a hurricane coming. They know they're in a flood zone. So they called us prior to even having a hurricane here and said, hey, we want to get on your list. We want to be your first one. So that's one way. We have, and then you get into a neighborhood, you have people walking up to your truck saying, hey, can you help me? Same with strip centers. You know, you go into a strip center, all the people come up to you, can you get to me next? We also have what we call DPPs, disaster preparedness plans, with certain customers, you know, restaurants, buildings, things like that, grocery stores, that will call us and say, okay, you know, we've got this DPP signed with you. We're ready for you. Online requests, you know, the general public can go to rainbowintl.com/sugarland and put in a request for, you know, water restoration, mold, whatever it is that they need, and we respond to that. So it's a variety of ways. We've got adjusters that are out in the field calling us and saying, hey, you know, I just saw a house. They need some help. Can you get over there?
Are you able to take on more work? Maria, are you able to take on more, or are you so busy it's just getting tough?
You know, it's about 5 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, it was pretty busy, but because we had other franchises in the Houston area helping us out, like I said, it was about 35, I think Chris mentioned that earlier, we were able to get our corporate office to reassign a lot of those jobs to the franchises that were here. Now it's kind of slowed down a little bit, but I mean, we're still busy with our everyday work. In addition to that, trying to wrap up some of the catastrophe jobs that we're currently working on.
Okay. And Cliff, go ahead.
Yeah, what I'd like to do is kind of shift the conversation a little bit. And I guess let's start with the Rainbow folks first. Are you using an indoor environmental professional to write the remediation protocols on these projects? What role, if any, are they playing, or are you kind of writing the remediation protocol yourself? And then I guess a follow-up question is, what criteria are you using, if any, for post-remediation verification?
We have the project manager for each project that will do the protocol. We, especially during the first week when the flood just hit, you don't have issues with mold yet because, you know, it's been the first few days, but you want to treat for the potential of mold because you're going to get mold spores and anytime you've got a moist environment, it has the potential to spread. But more importantly is the bacteria. You're getting overground water inside your facility. So you really, at that point, need to be more concerned with the bacteria rather than the mold. So the project manager is the one that does the scope, the protocol, and then we offer the ability, once we're done, before you build back, we offer the ability to come in and do a complete mold assessment. Of course, that's an additional cost, but we do have that we offer all of our customers.
Jim? Same question. Are you running into IEPs?
I never on a commercial basis did my own testing. I would sternly suggest / require that the client would hire a CIH and the MABS to do it. I would bid their protocol. That's just the way I did it. That's what I recommend. I didn't do but one house in 20 years, and that wasn't my fault. So it was all industrial commercial. But when I'm above the radar, and that's where the difference is between myself and a lot of other companies, even that I'm running through now. They try to get under the radar on the OSHA safety. We're small, we're going to get under this. That works until the guy gets hurt and his widow's attorney sues the hell out of you. But if you have a CIH who does the protocol on a contamination or on any type of problem like that, and then you bid what it's going to cost, 1.7 or whatever, or 200,000 to do that protocol, then when you're done, he has the clearance samples come back from the lab saying you have met that protocol, your clearance samples have passed. I walk away with less liability, not just my liability, but if I'm working for like Walmart or Sears or Lord & Taylor's, etc., they have the liability exposure that I really don't have. If I go in there on a decontamination of hantavirus or something like that, and it's not cleaned up, they're the ones that are going to lose the hundreds of millions or the millions or billions in PR, not little Jim Thompson. So I would preach this as part of my marketing, is cover your client's ass, not just yours.
And Jim, are you getting PRV for both, just, you know, water damage where there was not mold yet and they're just doing like a bacteria screen on these commercial projects?
No. I'm talking about when we're going in on an actual mold problem or on a virus or contamination problem or something like that.
See,
if I've got to go in and do a trauma cleanup or something like that, I'm not going to do a test, if there is one, to see if the guy had Hep B or not. We're going to handle it as if it's a bloodborne pathogen type of thing.
So we got a text question, and I think we got to kind of differentiate between a water damage restoration, whether it's sewage or Category 3, 2, et cetera, versus a mold remediation project, which for some reason people get a little more particular about having a PRV. But the text question I got is, you know, isn't the restoration project manager writing the protocol like the fox watching the hen house? Which, you know, I think it's a legitimate question. And then I think more importantly, they're asking, are the insurance companies okay with that? Are you guys getting any insurance companies that specifically say, after this, let's just take a water damage, a Category 3. After this water damage, we want you to get a third party to do some type of post-remediation clearance or verification.
In Texas?
Yes.
No, we haven't experienced that in Houston. So for the Houston areas, no, we haven't seen that.
Very rare. Okay. What about with mold remediation? Texas, did they... They rescinded, at least temporarily, the mold licensing for assessors and remediators. Is that still the case down there?
Well, that's probably a better question to ask Mike Bowdoin. And I did ask him about that. It wasn't relaxed like a lot of people think it was, but I hadn't read the actual verbatim note that Mike wrote.
We're going to have Mike on a future show, so I understand if that's, it's probably best to leave that to him. Jim, Pete, what about Florida? They have pretty strict licensing laws too for mold remediation. Is there any word they may loosen those?
I haven't heard of any. This is Chuck. I haven't heard of any. And yes, in Florida, you have to have a license by the state in order to bid, I say again, bid a mold job, in my understanding, let alone do it.
And with respect to doing these projects, let's give us some idea of maybe one of your more unique or interesting projects. Let's start with Chris and Maria, and then we'll go over to Jim.
You know, that's a tough question about a unique project.
They're all unique, right?
They're all unique, yeah, in their own way. You know, we started actually prior to Harvey with going out to some of our DPP customers and preparing them for the hurricane before it hit. And, you know, grocery stores are a good example. That is a place that everybody's going to need during and after. There were so many grocery stores in the Houston area that had to shut down. You couldn't get groceries, or the shelves were empty. So we went to some of our customers, the grocery stores, and we actually prepared them for the storm so that they would survive and be able to stay open, be open the next day after the hurricane, so people were able to get in there and get their groceries and water and food, the things they needed.
Okay.
Let's back one step beyond that and go into McLean and Dot and different transportation facility companies, because after Charlie hit, the Orlando, Florida McLean was shut down, and that brought the food in for the grocery stores and the Walmarts and 7-Elevens, et cetera. So if the trucking and distribution network is down, the local guys might be ready to open up their grocery store, but if there's no bottled water because the transportation's down, then you back up into a larger sphere of the industrial versus the local and say, I've got to get this entire network of transportation back up. What's it going to take to get McLean or Dot back in business?
And Jim, I'm wondering, you know, where are we with respect to, are all the schools back open down in the Keys and government offices, hospitals? Where are we with that in Florida?
I don't know about the schools and all down in the Keys. I'm in constant contact with one of the big restoration franchises about a hospital problem in the Keys that has 8 foot of mold and hazmat in it right now, and we're talking about that very, very regularly. I got a call yesterday from a client of mine. He's jumping up and down. He's all thrilled. He's found out that he can turn a bid in on 500 homes at a military base in Key West working for the military. And he asked me, how many of these can I put my proposal in on and get back in? Because if I can do all 500 of them, I could make $20 million in the next month or two. And I talked to this good guy, and he's a very good guy, but he's very young in our industry. He's only been around a year or two, and saying, have you ever done this? He hadn't, but just look at the fact he could make $20 million in 2 months. And I'm thinking, to get 500 homes hooded, gutted, and including drywall, electric, plumbing, why don't you take on 50?
Yeah.
Is that all? I'm like, that's one a day for the next 2 months. You know, don't get so blinded by I can make $100 million, I can make $20 million, to realize you can lose your ass if you put it in and have a performance bond. You know, pick out 10. See how it works. The next hurricane, go for 50.
That's a great tip. Jim, that's a great tip for people, and I think it's a really good story for listeners to pay attention to. By the way, that text, Florida has not relaxed any licensing protocols, but it's easier to get a CWP. A CWP is a concealed weapons permit, so I just wanted to clarify that for the listeners. All right, let's go back.
I got one of those, but I can't shoot the dang bowl. Come on, guys.
hey, Joe, you know, it's really not that funny. I think Pete can attest, when we were in New Orleans after Katrina on a FEMA consulting team, we're actually, the folks we were working with, Frank Heaton was the coordinator, and they had shotguns in every truck.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you look at the looting, you look at some of the crazy behavior, and, you know, protecting yourself and your client and so on and so forth is pretty important.
So I understand. Go ahead.
People who have not been in a real disaster do not realize that 911 does not work. I'm serious, guys. There's no law and order at a Katrina on South Dixie Highway, or at the Rodney King riots, or the Northridge earthquake, or you know, Andrews, et cetera. Andrews, South Dixie Highway, not Katrina. We had a time in a L.A. Earthquake where a urban gentleman opened up the back of one of my semis and said, "You got anything in there worth stealing?" And my guy pointed a Model 12 12 gauge at him and said, "Some lead." And the guy did the best song and dance you ever saw. He says, "This ain't even my truck. I got the wrong truck.
I'm not gonna..." Hey, let me give
it happen. But you are on your own out there, guys, with water, food, and safety. It really is.
Very well said. Chris and Maria, this is, I didn't send this question to you. It just came up while I was thinking about all this. So maybe you don't know, or maybe you haven't heard. My understanding from, you know, watching news and reading articles and knowing a lot of people in the construction world and in the building science world is that the code in and around Houston, the building code and the zoning code, is very lax, and that, you know, you can build just about anything anywhere. And I'm wondering, has there been any discussion since this disaster occurred about maybe tightening that up a little bit, because you've got, you know, chemical plants next door to housing plans or schools or anything? Any talk about that at all?
I think we're going to plead the fifth on that one. Yeah, the zoning here is a little bit
awkward.
Relaxed. Have we heard anything that they're going to tighten the requirements? No, we haven't. I haven't heard anything on the news about that.
Okay. Just curious. It seems
don't ask, don't tell.
Well, I mean, here's what we get down to, and you know, this is a good discussion, I think. You look at Florida, you look at Texas. We're going to have to spend, and Puerto Rico, we're going to have to spend a lot of money as a country to help bring these places back. And if we had building code that was more conducive to building homes and buildings that were more resistant to these types of events, maybe we wouldn't have to spend as much building back. And I'm curious as to why there hasn't been more attention on that issue, but maybe most people aren't thinking about that right now. They're just trying to get through the disaster. Does anybody have a comment?
No, but this is Jim. It's a money situation. It's always after a disaster. Why didn't we have stronger codes? Why didn't we have this? And yes, they do come down with hurricane straps, et cetera. But to build a facility that would stand up to a Cat 5 hurricane, you'd need a frickin' pillbox or something.
Sure.
And no one's going to be paying that kind of money and wanting to live in it. So there's that balance between how much are we going to charge to rebuild it versus how much, what are the odds of it happening again? You see? And so many people, just to change subjects just one second, so many people talk about disasters who've never been in a real one. I saw a book on how to survive a disaster by putting an inflatable raft in your attic with a fire axe to cut through the roof in case you get trapped up there. I thought, why not put the boat on the front porch with a painter or lying on it there, and when the water comes up, row away. Why not get out 3 days ahead of time? People are talking about things they don't know. In real disasters, you have to have codes good enough for what might hit, but not to the extreme of, if it really had this, does every building have to put up with 200-mile-an-hour flying debris?
Thank you, Jim.
Joe,
Cliff.
It's Cliff. One of the biggest issues, in Houston isn't so much the building code. It really deals with water retention, having the ability to retain the water. And that seemed to be one of the things that was outdated and insufficient down there. And
it
wasn't
Allison, too, though, Cliff. And Allison, which is, 12, 15 years ago, tropical storm 3 days, flooded the hospitals downtown and all. They supposedly did work since then. It still happened again.
And if you don't have code and you pavement over everything, there's nowhere for that water to go. So I just think it's a question we're going to see more of. Let's go to the roundup.
Move 'em on, hit 'em up, move 'em on, hit 'em up, rawhide. Cut 'em out, ride 'em in, let 'em out, cut 'em out, ride 'em in, rawhide.
All right, Cliff, let me turn it over to you, see if you have any final questions, and then I'd like to give each guest a chance to add anything that we may have missed.
What I'd like to do is get a comment from Jim on the role that creativity and street smarts plays in getting work in these types of situations.
Okay, let's look at it. What if Houston, Rainbow, every checkpoint that was there that said locals only pass this point, what if every guard, every guy there in a reflective vest had a bottle of water in his hand with a Rainbow flag, my thing, with the Rainbow logo and the 800 number. Because they had been to every, and I'm picking on you guys, but because they had been to every community preparedness disaster event for years beforehand, and they were so used to passing out Rainbow bottles that the checkpoints would say, oh, Rainbow, a van, come here. Do you have more bottled water for us? Oh, yeah. You need to get down there? Sure. I did this, guys. You know, it works.
Okay.
Involved with the community before it happens, so they expect you to be as part of it. They don't keep you out. They say, let him in, let him in.
And as I understand it, Mike Bowden, actually, we met through Mike, and that was one of the reasons he referred us to you to do this show, Chris and Maria. He said that, you know, you've been out doing outreach to the community, you've been on the news, you've been, really, really present where people can, you know, see who you are and get to know you a little bit. Before we go, is there anything that you'd like to add for listeners, especially those that are, you know, responding to these types of disasters? Any tips you want to give them? Anything we missed at all?
Well, I have one big tip for everybody in Houston. And y'all have probably heard this on the news, but in Houston, and, well, I would say all of South Texas, a very small percentage of the people that flooded actually had flood insurance. It was very painful for a lot of people. So my tip to everyone listening, get flood insurance. It is not expensive, because Houston will flood again. Mm-hmm. There are more and more people moving to Houston every day, every week, every month. There's more concrete going down. There's less place for the water to go. So every time they build a new neighborhood, they build it a little bit higher, which pushes the water into the old neighborhood. We will flood again. There will be storms. So everybody get flood insurance. It's not expensive. It is affordable. Do it today.
Maria, anything you'd like to add before we go?
You know, the big part is definitely getting involved with the community. So I'm glad, I can't recall the person who mentioned the getting involved with the community, but that's definitely something that we did and we have been doing in the past. It's not about us taking from the community. It's also about us giving back to the community, even if it's free advice, if it's free services. So we were out there in the local community just giving advice to real estate brokers, to, local neighborhoods, just trying to assist them because it was a time of need, and it still is.
Well, thank you for taking time out to join us here today on IAQ Radio. And I want to see if Pete, do we still have you on the line?
Yeah, I had to check out for a short time right after the roundup, but I've been on here for the last 10 minutes or so.
You got a final comment before we go, Pete?
Well, just a little mini report of what's happening here in Florida since we last talked. What we're finding is, and particularly in these coastal areas and a lot of places where people may snowbird or maybe they're not in these homes, in these houses, they're starting to see that they're discovering, you know, water that got in there from, you know, from the hurricanes, windblown water. A lot of it is, in the non-conditioned spaces, so people are starting to check. We're finding out from a lot of the members, you know, a lot of these are going to be mold and remediation type jobs. May not be dry, and possibly it's too late, you know, depending on the time, distance, and the circumstances. We're also hearing there's a lot of requests for IEP type of work. Particularly down in the islands and in the Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico, I think for people to go down and tell them what they need, you know, what the level of damage is, and write protocol, those kinds of things before just having the restoration people come in. You're starting to find that restoration people are starting to rely more on that, maybe to reduce their liability or to have more clarity on to try to get as close to following the industry standard as they can. So we're finding more of that stuff happening. And I don't know whether, you filled the listeners in, but, I just want to publicly thank you guys. I don't know they have the time and the energy and effort that you're putting in to continue to cover this. I think CleanPacks R&R, the industry journals, are doing it too, but it's not the same as having the guests and having direct reports from the field come in. So I think that's great. And some of the other people that we're working on for future shows over the next month or so to deal with different types of issues from different perspectives from not only Texas and Florida, but some of the other states and Puerto Rico and some of the offshore areas. And of course now Tropical Storm Nate is out there. Supposed to be hitting Cancun. Cliff has a place down there. He's had a couple hurricanes in the past at Cancun. I don't know whether his place is going to hit again. And then the track keeps changing, but it looked like it was going to come off the Gulf. They're probably going to get winds in Florida, and I think maybe in Louisiana. I'm not sure, but that's kind of happening. So, it's just the season isn't over, and we're going to keep getting pounded. It just this happens to be one of those years. So, anyway, that's really all I have. I'm traveling around, I'm on the ground, and I'll call in as often as I can and help you guys with the guest, and kind of keep giving the updates as I find them.
Well, thank you, Pete, and thanks for joining us. I also want to thank Jim Thompson, the big dog of large losses, Chris and Maria Slay from Rainbow Restoration, Sugarland, and Katie. Of course, the restoration industry's global watchdog, Pete Consigli. My engineer, John, you gotta have faith. My co-host, the Z-Man, Cliff Zlotnick. Cliff and I, my engineer's on vacation next week. We're going to do a flashback Friday next week, but we'll pick a really good show for you to check out from the archives. And then 2 weeks from now, we'll be back with the next live edition of IAQ Radio.
It's the 2017 Healthy Building Summit, November 2nd through the 4th at Seven Springs Mountain Resort in the gorgeous Laurel Highlands of southwestern Pennsylvania. Join industry leaders and educators as they discuss research to practice, navigating changing industries. It's 2.5 days of IEQ, remediation, building science, and home performance. Marquee sponsors include John Don Products, where restoration and abatement contractors shop, Particle Plus, Count on Us. Exhibitors are AEML Microbiology Laboratories, True Tech Tools, Prism Analytical Technologies, Fiberlock Technologies, HaywardScore.com, and Instascope by Detection Tech. Register now at HealthyBuildingsSummit.com or call 814-754-4808. For IAQ Radio, I'm Spike Reel, saying thanks for listening.